Das hat sich in der Sprache geschlagen, wenn wir heute im Sektor geschrieben haben, dass wir nicht mehr sagen, dass wir nicht mehr sagen, dass wir nicht mehr sagen. Aber ich sage, if a woman who is an Almana got married to the Kohen Gadol and was then captured, the Kohen Gadol would be chayiv to get her redeemed because it would fit into the verbiage of the Mishnah that a Kohen must redeem his wife to bring her back to her city, since she'll be also to him for having been captured. However, if Mamzeres and Rasina was married to Yisrael and was captured, the husband would not have to redeem her because he can't be said to say, redeem her and return her as a wife because she's also to him. Rava said, if the woman becomes also to the husband because of the fact that she was captured, he has to redeem her. If she's also to him for some other reason, he's not chayiv to redeem her. In fact, maybe we can say that the argument machlokes of a brayse. The brayse says, Rabbi Yehuda says, if someone swore that his wife may not benefit from him and she's captured, he must redeem her and divorce her and pay the ksuba. Yeshua says he must divorce her and pay the ksuba, but he doesn't have to redeem her. Presumably, the case is discussed is where the woman was the wife of a kohen, and Abaye said his view in accordance with the view of Rabbi Yehuda, where Rava said his view in the view with according to Rabbi Yeshua. Or said, no, maybe the case that it may be that the case is where the husband was a non kohen. The case is where the woman made the vow not to benefit from the husband, and the husband did not annul the vow. Rabbi Eliezer holds that by not annulling the vow, not being made for the vow, it's as if he caused the vow and he therefore must still redeem her, even though he can't take her back as a wife. Rabbi Yeshua says she is viewed as the cause of the vow over here, and therefore he doesn't have to redeem her. In fact, if Rabbi Yeshua says that she's at fault, why does he have to pay the ksuba? Mar says it must be that the case is where the husband made the vow. Abaye will say that all agree that when the captured woman was an Ammona who was married to a Kohen Gadol, or any woman actually married to a Kohen, he would be chayiv to redeem her. All agree further that if she was mamzeres and Asina married to Yisrael, he would not be chayiv to redeem her. The machloikas is where someone made the vow to prevent his wife from benefiting from him. In that case, Rabbi Eliezer says we follow the time of the stipulation to redeem her. When was that made? Meaning when they got married. We have to look at the time they got married, and he therefore has to redeem her. Rabbi Yeshua says we look at the present time, and therefore since she can't remain married to him now because of the vow, therefore he's not chayiv to redeem her. Rava will say that all agree that in the case of Almana married to the Kohen Gadol and mamzeres married to Yisrael, he would not be chayiv to redeem her. The machloikis is the case where a vow was made whether the man is a kohen or not. Eliezer says we follow the time that the stipulation was made, and Yeshua says we follow the present time, meaning after the vow. The Mishnah said nishbeis chayiv levdoisa v'chulu. A braisa says if a woman was captured and then her husband died, if he was aware of the capture before he died, the heirs must redeem her from the estate. If he was not aware, they don't have to redeem her. Levi says that Levi was going to follow this braisa in practice. Rav told him that Rabbi Chiya said that we don't pass like this braisa. Rather, we pass like another braisa that says that once the husband dies, there's no longer a chiv on him or the estate to redeem her. A braisa says if a woman was captured and the captors demand even 10 times her worth, the husband has to redeem her for the first time this happens. After that time, he may redeem her, but he's not required to do so. Shimon Gamliel says we never redeem a person for more than their worth, so as to not entice kidnappers to kidnap again and more often. This suggests, frankly, that Shimon Gamliel holds that he has to redeem her at her value, even if it's more than the value of the ksuba. However, we find elsewhere that Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that the husband doesn't have to spend more than the value of the ksuba to redeem her. Mar said Rav Shimon Gamliel holds of two leniencies. Number one, he doesn't have to spend more than her value. And number two, he doesn't have to spend more than the value of her ksuba. The Mishnah said, Lokza chayav l'rapoisa. A braisa says a widow is supported from the estate if she needs medical treatment that's like support. That's considered like support, and it's also paid from the estate. Shimon Gamliel says medical treatment that is not for a chronic ailment is paid by the ksuba. Chronic treatment is paid for as support. Rabbi Yochanan said in Eretz Yisrael they treated bloodletting as a chronic ailment. The relatives of Rabbi Yochanan were paying for the medical treatment of their father's almana. He advised them to get a set price with the doctor so then it would be treated as other than chronic and would be payable from the ksuba payment. Rabbi Yochanan then felt bad that he helped the litigant with the strategy. The Gemara explains initially he thought that as a relative it was proper for him to try to help out. Later he felt that as an Adam Choshev Shani, he should have remained impartial. Zok the Mishnah, if a man did not write a ksubas bin indichrin, where he agrees to give the woman's sons the proceeds of her ksuba and her other properties, and that they shouldn't have to share those assets with any other brothers from another mother that they may have. So if he didn't write the ksubas bin indichrin in the ksuba, he's still chayiv to do this because it's a tanai bezin. If a man did not write in the ksuba that the woman's daughters will be supported from his estate until they're married off, he's still chayiv to do so because, again, this is a tnai of bezdin. Zok the Mishnah, if a man did not write in the ksuba that the woman will be supported from his estate when he dies, he's still chayiv to do so because, again, this is a tnai bezdin. This is how the people of Yerushalayim and the Galil would write their ksubas, that she gets supported until she gets married or until she demands her ksuba payment, as will be stated in the Gemara. The people of Yehuda would write that she was to get supported until the heirs want to pay off the ksuba. Therefore, if they want, they could pay her ksuba and be potter from any further support. Zakti Mar Rabbi Yochanan, name Rabbi Shimon Yochai, said the Ksubas and Dichin was instituted so that people would feel comfortable giving large dowries to their daughters. Can it be that they're right? He said the boys are supposed to inherit in the Rabbanon. We said that they wouldn't get it, that they would give it to the woman's daughters before the husband's other sons. Mar said we learn from a pasuk that fathers should marry off their sons and daughters. The way a father can marry off his daughter is by making her attractive with a large dowry. To encourage this, the Rabbanon created a method for the father to be comfortable that his property will remain with his own descendants. How much is one supposed to give as a dowry? Abaye and Rabbi Bal said one should give up to a tenth of his possessions. Maybe we should say that the woman's sons, without their half-brothers, should inherit the property given by their grandfather, but should not inherit, without their half-brothers, the part of the ksuba that's given by their father. Marcel, doing so will cause the woman's father to hold back from giving a large dowry. Maybe we should say that where the father doesn't give any dowry, the husband's part of the ksuba should be shared by all the sons, not just from that wife. Marcel, the Rabbanon didn't want to differentiate from the different cases of ksuba. Maybe we should say that if the wife has no sons, her daughter should inherit the ksuba. Marcel, the Rabbanon gave it the status of inheritance, and as such, it has to go to the sons. Daughters don't inherit in the place where there are sons. When the man only has daughters, the daughters of the deceased wife should inherit the entire ksuba. The Mara said the Rabbanon did not want to differentiate from this among the other cases, similar cases. Why is the ksuba between the dichin not collected from metalton, from movable property? The Mara said the Rabbanon gave it the status of the ksuba, which may only be collected from real property. If so, they should be able to collect payment from properties that were sold. Or said they're Yarshim, and Yarshim don't inherit from properties that were sold. Why don't the sons collect if the estate will be left with less than a dinner? Or says, because doing so would uproot the deraisa laws of Yerusha, and therefore we can't allow that to happen.